The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Yes, it's your money, not anyone else's money. It's your money. That's the origins of this show. Many, many years ago, I was talking about David Hayes and your money. And my nephew, who at the time was probably 10 or 11, said, "Why is it your money?" And I guess not my money, it's their money. So I changed the name to Your Money with David Hayes. That's a little history lesson for those of you that are new to the program and maybe a repeat of some that I've said before for those that are legacy listeners to the big show. Hey, did everyone have a great Memorial Day weekend? I did. I was super crazy busy coming off of the Ed Slot Elite IRA Advisor meeting in Atlanta, then from Atlanta flying to Detroit and having the fishing guys pick me up in the turd, as we call it, the rolling turd, the RV, right through Detroit Airport arrival area. Literally driving up, opened the door, slung my bags in, jumped in. Next thing you know, I was in Wawa, Canada, and then I was up into White River, and we were fishing for walleye and pike that next afternoon. So we froze our tails off, but we finally made it back late on Wednesday night to then turn around and have a quick weekend. We had Friday nights over at the Bloomington Speedway. That was crazy, insane. It went late, so apologize for everyone hanging around that area. Has some wrecks and some things that were out of our control. Plus 51 race cars, sprint cars showed up and a bunch of stock cars as well. Then Saturday, we had a lake day, which was nice, out on Lake Lemon. So we were cruising around there. Pretty chilly, so not a lot of folks. And then, of course, Sunday was a big race day. Fun day up at the track, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Got back, ate at my favorite Mexican restaurant on the south side, Pizza Hut Mexican, as we refer to it. Then, of course, big Memorial Day, which is tradition for my family to head to the cemetery and decorate graves. So we went to the service at Rose Hill first and visited a few graves there, laid some pineys, as we used to call, as we should call them, I think, whereas the people that grew up around here call them pineys. That's how I grew up knowing them, the pretty flowers that bloom this time of year. I was actually cutting those at my house on Monday morning, putting them in a nice moist towel, and then off we went. And we went to Valhalla to, we didn't go to the ceremony there, but we have a lot of family there. My wife's mother and her dad are buried there right by the mausoleum. And then we went to over to where my grandmother and a bunch of my family's buried. And that was good. It's fun. And then we went to Clear Creek Cemetery after that. And I enjoy that. You know, you look at the headstones and, you know, you go to Clear Creek, a lot of Bloomington names. You see a lot of Bloomington names, and I can't even start to go through them all. But a lot of people like the Shields, Hayes, Deckards, you name it, they're out there. Kinzers, they're all there. Blackwell, a lot of, and but then you go to Rose Hill, it's a lot more of the IU people, I would say. Much older cemetery. So it was good. And then after that, we went back out to Lake Lemon and enjoyed an afternoon there with my son and his girlfriend. Had a little lunch at the porthole and then called it a day. So that was our Memorial Day weekend in a flash. So I hope you had a great one as well. It was a lot of fun, tiring, and have had a fun week this week getting back at it. All right, let's do a little news of the week brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning and sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. Dirk Bland's son, Alex, he will be now official on the parking crew at Bloomington Speedway, as my son is the head of that on the Friday night races. So I think we've announced already, as you're listening on this Thursday night, that the race for Friday night which is the big, I mean, it's a huge stock car race. People come from New York and everywhere to race, is being postponed until later in the season, probably September, because of the, basically track conditions with all the moisture we've had. It just makes it difficult when you get those big stock cars in there running. So I'm learning a lot about racetracks, a lot about racing. I grew up around racing, but never have been so intimately involved in the inner workings of a racetrack. So when you go and you see it pulled off, know that there's a lot of levers being pulled behind the scenes. And let's give a shout out to Lance Like at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance, 812-323-8300. Okay, we've been waiting on this big, beautiful bill, right, to pass through Congress. And I think later I'm going to talk to you about how a bill actually becomes a law. And I'm not going to sing the Sesame Street song to you, but I might. You never know. So there's a lot of things that we're starting to see come out of this as it passed through Congress and now it's in the Senate's hands. But here's the thing I'm kind of excited about. Another 20 million Americans could soon have access to the terrific tax advantages of HSAs. Health savings accounts. They're already a sweet deal for everybody. They could get even sweeter. The sprawling tax and spending bill passed by the House on May 22nd included changes to the HSA, as they're called. If enacted by Senate, which takes up the legislation next month, they would expand access to these tax-favored accounts. So far, the changes have attracted little opposition or even comment, but pack a powerful punch. HSAs are tied to all kinds of remarkable tax breaks, and people can use them. You know, you put money in, you get a tax deduction, it grows tax-free, it comes out tax-free, and this could be the biggest expansion of HSAs since they took effect back in 2004, and really a positive jolt for people overall. In particular, the changes have addressed the glitches that have presented and prevented many older taxpayers from having HSAs. They've also simplified the confusing HSA rules. And there's so many confusing rules from HSAs, especially when you get around age 65. Over the past two decades, HSAs have become a part of a widely available health option, both for employees and individuals. To qualify for an HSA, you must have a high deductible health coverage plan that meets certain standards. Current law allows a range of deductibles, most people around $5,000 for single, $10,000 for family. To encourage people to use the high deductible plans, health insurance is paired with the HSA. So you have a high deductible plan, HSA, so then if you don't need the insurance, you keep contributing to the HSA. It keeps growing. You can invest it. You can do all these great things. And what's great is HSAs have served even as a supplement, as a retirement income plan, because you not only can use it for current expenses, which are somewhat limited, but not overly limited, but you can reimburse yourself for old expenses as long as you are covered by an HSA. So let's say I'm in my 40s or 50s, putting money in my HSA, and I don't use it well, but I still pay out-of-pocket expenses. And then I get older, 65, 70, 75, I can repay myself for past expenses. There's actually pending 10 provisions in the legislation expanding HSA benefits, which would take effect in 2026 and beyond. Some of the big important ones right now is people that are age 65 can't put money in HSA. They're looking to flip that and change that around, especially if you're still on an employer plan. Current law makes it hard or impossible for HSAs to be part of any of the Affordable Health Care Act. If you're on a, like me and my wife, we're on the exchange. We have a silver plan. We pay a bunch of money for it. I would love to have an HSA, but it's not even an option. The proposed bill would designate a bronze and catastrophic plan, which have the highest deductibles, as qualified coverage for HSAs and their benefits. Yay! HSA is a small one here, but for fitness expenses, that's going to be added as well. This is a good one, I think, too, and I will end with this. Catch-up contributions by spouses to the same account. Just like IRAs, there's no joint HSAs for married couples. Each spouse has their own HSA. Yet each spouse is eligible to make a $1,000 catch-up contribution every year after you turn 55 or older and beyond. Under current law, each spouse has to make this contribution on their own. But now, what if one spouse doesn't have an HSA? Maybe they're older and on Medicare or something. Now, the new provision would clarify that both spouses can make their catch-up contributions to the same HSA. Good stuff, folks. A lot of stuff to talk about this summer. I can't wait as the big, beautiful bill makes its way through Congress. We'll be right back. We're going to talk to Hot Rod about what's going on in the markets and more. It's Your Money. Yep, Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. We've got Rod Holloway on the phone with me, batting leadoff, actually, after our opening segment. Rod, let me, before I get to what's been going on this trade shortened week, meaning Memorial Day week, let's talk about last week for a minute, because the S&P, NASDAQ, Dow, all down for the week, over 2.5%. On Monday, stocks were under a bit of pressure after the credit agency, Moody's, downgraded the U.S. I'm not even going to talk about that. That's so silly, because that's like when the S&P did it years ago. Nothing happened except our bonds went up. So I'm not worried about that. Right now I'm not. Stocks did continue under pressure midweek. Treasury yields did move higher, with the 30-year bond hitting a 19-month high, not a year high, 19-month high. Investors kind of fretted over the budget deficit. Some feared that the deficit would make and made worse the spending bill winding its way through Congress. After the House approved the bill, bond yields did back off their highs and stocks went sideways. Then on Friday, here we go, stocks dropped after President Trump warned of 50% tariffs on European goods following an apparent stall in trade negotiations. And at the same time, the administration also threatened a 25% tariff on all iPhones manufactured outside the U.S. Unexpected tariff news. So the president's fresh tariff talk ended a week or so of relative tranquility on the trade front. While the EU tariff threat may end the deal, similar deals with other countries and regions, the iPhone issue was a stickier one, I think. Some analysts have estimated that making iPhones in the U.S. would increase manufacturing costs by as much as 50%. which might increase the price of the phone. I read that off of a commentary. You know, I didn't write that, because I would be like, that would increase the price of the phone. Anyway, Rod, tariff talks. Sticks and stones break my bones, but words don't matter. All right, Rod, take it from here.
Hey, yeah, exactly. Well, we kind of talked about it coming into the year and knowing that tariffs was on the agenda, that we were going to have a lot of headline risk. In both directions, kind of like we had this morning, in which the court came out last night and said these tariffs are not legal the way that Trump implemented them and the authority that he used for them. So, boom, you get a bit of a rally, because all of a sudden the tariffs are temporarily off the table. Of course, there's going to be an appeal process on that. You know, the other thing is, I sit here and I kind of skim through and I look at the charts of the major indices, the S&P, the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones. You know, you also can look at it from a technical perspective. You know, we had one heck of a run prior to last week, coming off of the lows that was set on the S&P back on April 7th. Got all the way down to 48.3504, had a good run. And then really about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, you had a gap open that you popped up on. It's not all that uncommon when you get a big run like that and have a gap up open on one of the days, that potentially there's some cooling off and you go back in and you fill that gap. Now, the sell-off last week didn't fully fill that gap, but it did make its way down to actually an area where three moving averages all converged. The 200-day probably in this circumstance was the more important one, but at the time, actually, you had a 20-day, 100-day, and a 200-day all kind of meeting up at the same point, and lo and behold, you found support there, and then we bounced here so far this week off of that. So I think that technical is driving us somewhat in the short term from time to time, and especially when we get out of periods of time of lots of info. So we've just come out of earnings season. Not fully. Pretty much every week you have earnings. As I tell Glass, there are always earnings, but of course there's a lot more on the regular calendar quarter. Now, what we had yesterday was NVIDIA. And NVIDIA, mainly because it's one of the most important ones, is kind of viewed as the last one in the quarterly calendar, although it's been fairly light going into this week. I think the previous Friday, not this past Friday, but the Friday before, I think the scorecard data I gave Glass, 97% of companies had reported their earnings at that point in time. The next week, you had retail, Walmart, Target, some of them, and then, like I said, Nvidia. So in everyone's mind, that kind of finishes the quarterly earnings for that. Earnings came in much stronger than expected. So I think that's part of what also helped this rally maintain itself and maybe even gain a little bit of steam above and beyond those headline risks we talk about. And most of those headline risks here recently have been favorable from a tariff perspective, in which the tariffs either came down or paused, or of course now with the court ruling, hey, that you can't do that at all. They're kind of temporarily off the table, although, as I said, the government has already said that they do plan to appeal, so there is still a fight going to go on as to whether or not they have the authority to do it, or it's only within Congress's hands.
I was talking to someone at the office this morning about, if nothing else, Trump is pushing the executive branch to say what can they do and what can't they do. And I think in the long run it could be good, because we've been, having executive orders, and at some point, and it's been going on well back when Obama was big on it. I mean, we've had a bunch of them, but it's like, let's get this figured out. Like, what can be done by executive order and what can't? So I think this is actually good that it will get shaken out for the future of what people in the person that holds the office in the executive branch. So I think it'll be good. But, today we had GDP. I haven't even seen, because we're recording a little bit early, but GDP numbers, have they come out today on this Thursday?
It may have. I haven't seen it on my live board, as far as I normally get the breaking news up there of that type of economic data, and I haven't seen it pop across my board up there. So unless it came in and already disappeared, I don't know if it's been released yet.
Yeah, gotcha. And then would that be a revision of the first quarter?
Yeah, I think that would be a revision, because just a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, we had a GDP number come out at that point in time, and you get a couple of revisions after that, because that initial number is some guesstimates that go into the input formula, and then they go back as they start to gather some of the real data and plug the real data in place of those guesstimates.
Yeah, and then Friday we had the personal consumption expenditure index. That's kind of an important one for the Fed to look at.
Yeah, that's their most important inflationary index, although I think the trend that we've seen both in PPI and CPI that came out, I think that was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago when they came out, and they cooled a little bit, that the expectation is that you're not going to see something alarming in PCE. It may not be down, but I don't think it's going to be anything that is necessarily going to dramatically change the way the Fed feels. Matter of fact, I just read an article this morning that was talking about the street is still pricing in 2 rate cuts, but most of the members of the Fed board have been discussing probably 1 cut this year. Of course, they always leave it open that they're going to be data dependent, and if the data changes, they will most certainly change what they think should be done. But where they sit in most of their recent talking points within the last few weeks and in any speaking engagements that those members have had, they're alluding to probably 1 rate cut this year.
Yeah, I think in many cases the Fed's kind of happy where we're sitting right now. You said earnings are good, jobless claims are not ridiculous, unemployment is within, is reasonable, and they're able to keep rates high, which would keep the money tight, therefore pull some of this inflation out of the market that we saw. I think they're fine sitting right where they are for the meantime. I'd love to personally see rates lower. Yeah, I've got a lot of loans out there on some real estate and other things I'd love to see go down in a couple of years and not go up. But yeah, I think we just have to be patient here. Rod, anything else before? I've got the summertime blues, right? And isn't that what we're supposed to be experiencing now? That we're not officially in summer.
The sell in May and go away, although that one hasn't been fulfilled here very often in the last few years. I'm on a consistent basis, and we've always said, hey, we don't manage our money based on calendar and old themes that have some consistency, but there's really nothing behind it. There's no fundamentals driving that, and I think in today's connected world, it's probably less of an issue than what it probably used to be.
Oh, yeah.
Before everyone was connected and everything was done via paper and on the trading floors themselves.
Right. I mean, back in the old days when you had less traders on the floor, less activity, kind of had the summer blues, that was it. And then you had the Santa Claus route. There's so many things that we have come up with over the years that have stuck that probably have little relevance to the markets like they used to. Rod, we appreciate you. I think Glass will be off this Friday, so they'll hear you on Glass in the afternoon on Monday afternoon next week. So have a great rest of the week, Hot Rod, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
Hey, I appreciate it, Dave. Have a great show.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, 2 weeks ago, I was at the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Meeting in Atlanta. 20 years in the making. We spent a lot of time talking about retirement accounts like we normally do and taxes and more. But we had a good segment on when close enough isn't good enough. And I'm going to go through some of the rules and regs that you need to know that close enough isn't good enough when it comes to retirement accounts. I'll take a break. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you have had a wonderful week on this Memorial Day week as we wrap up our four-day week starting tomorrow, Friday, if you're listening to this on Saturday. I hear warmer weather is coming, so that's good. I do like warmer weather during the summertime when I'm on my boat on Lake Lemon, so hopefully that'll turn the corner sooner than later, and it sure sounds like it will. All right, 2 weeks ago, I was at my Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group meeting in Atlanta. Why did we go to Atlanta? Because 20 years ago, Ed started this group, and I was part of the founding group. The founding members then were around 50 strong, and a lot of them have dropped by the wayside, not because they've dropped out of the group. It's because they've either dropped dead or they have dropped out of the business being retired. Most of them back then were about my age, in the mid-50s, who joined, and I was in my mid-30s. So I was a young guy in the group, and now I'm probably average age in the group, I would say. But we're up to close to 500 members now. And we went to dinner after the board meeting, because I'm on the advisory council as well, and we were just reminiscing about the old days and where we are today. We did our elite night out, sort of our social night, at we went to see Atlanta Braves game, and all of us fit into a suite, one suite. And now when you have the elite night out, you know, we went to the College Football Hall of Fame down in Atlanta. So we needed a big venue. We had a band. You know, it was kind of cool. If you've ever been there, all of the colleges that have football are represented with a helmet. So I was able to find the Greenville Panthers, which is where I played, Greenville University. And up in the far left corner, they'll put a little purple light on it for you, and there you go. So if you're down there, you can find your team that you follow, that you root for. It's a lot of fun. But that's not what we were there for. We were there to educate ourselves on a lot of things. And one segment that we worked on was with retirement accounts, close enough is not good enough. Now, I'll give you a couple of examples. One would be on qualified charitable distributions. Now, we have messed with the minimum distribution age, 73 for people born before 1960, 75 for people born 1960 or later. But the thing that didn't change was the opportunity to give money from your IRA at 70 and a half tax-free. Now, this is where close enough's not good enough. It's not 70 and 5 months and 28 days. It's 70 and a half. You have to be 70 and a half. Even one day prior to that, it doesn't count. You have to be 70 and a half. In fact, just to be safe, I would do 70 and a half in at least one day before I do the distribution. That is close enough is not good enough. Hey, by the way, on qualified charitable distributions, beginning this year, it's going to be reported on your 1099-Rs, which is cool because in the past, you had to remember you did it and tell your tax person. Otherwise, you would pay taxes on a QCD. No longer is that the case. They will report it just like they do early distributions, normal distributions, rollover. It's going to have its own code in box 7. So now whenever you do a qualified charitable distribution, it will have its own 1099-R own code. So hopefully no one misses that any longer. Missing the 60-day rollover window by one day, not good enough. You know, if you take money out of a retirement account, you have 60 days to put it back in. 61 doesn't work. 62 doesn't work. Does not work. 60 days. Has to be within 60 days. Also violating the one rollover per year rule. Close enough's not good enough. If you take money out of an IRA and put it back in within 60 days, you can only do one of those every 365 days. And that's IRA to IRA, Roth to Roth, plan to plan, and one, period. That's all you can do. Now, if the following rollovers are not subject to 1 year rule, which would be a plan like a 401k, 2 IRA, IRA back to the plan. Those aren't subject to those rules. It's just IRA to IRA, period. So other things that aren't good enough to be close enough or close enough to be good enough, missing the super catch-up birthday by one day. Congress increased catch-up contribution opportunities for employees age 60 to 63. That's in 401. This is so funny because no one could understand why. And we're like, I'd like to know the why. And finally, Ed's like, we don't know why. But you have this opportunity to have a super catch-up if you are 60, 61, 62, or 63 on the last day of the year. So if you turned, you know, let's say you were 59 on December 31st, 2024, but the very next day you turned turned 60, you're not eligible for that year when you were 59, even though it was one day. So one day does matter. There's other things, retiring too soon and the still working exception. Now, I'm just not going to get into a lot here, but we're talking like if people retire from a job and they are required minimum distribution age, they have to take an RMD. They have to take a required minimum distribution by April 1st of the following year. Now, if you're still working for the company and you don't own more than 5% of that company, then you can delay your RMDs indefinitely. And the question is, what is considered employment? If you work an hour a month, we've concluded yes. That has not been clarified by the IRS yet, but I anticipate at some point they're going to say something like you have to have so many hours in, because there's a lot of people playing that game with delaying RMDs. I'm not sure why you would want to. But, you know, because someone's going to pay the tax some point down the road and so on and so forth. But the list does go on. I'm just saying that precision is required for nearly every retirement account transaction. Close enough is not good enough when it comes to these things, whether it's QCDs or whether it's the 59.5 rule, like, for instance, penalty-free withdrawals. I can't be 59 in 5 months and 8 days. No, I have to be 59.5. Now, the one rule that is interesting is the rule of 55. If you leave employment in the year you turn 55, right, in the year you turn 55, then you can access money from your 401ks, 403bs, and such without a penalty. If you roll it into an IRA, you're subject to the rule age 59.5. So a lot of folks, I'm like, okay, you're gonna leave your job on December 31st, and you are 54, but you know what? You're going to be 55 next year. Can you wait till January 1? That'll give you access to all of that money completely, not tax. You're going to pay tax on it. We always pay tax. Can't avoid tax. Death and taxes, right? We all know that's for sure. But you can avoid the 10% penalty on distributions from that plan. Pretty cool stuff. Now, before I take a break, I want to talk about this real quick. The one thing I was grossly disappointed in was I was excited to hear an update on tax policy. And I was very disappointed. But here's what I know. Tax cuts are likely to be extended. All the promises of no tax on tips, overtime, Social Security cannot be reconciled. But fuzzy math can make anything work. Figures lie and liars figure, a wise man once told me. But nonetheless, the big beautiful bill will likely pass in some capacity. But remember how a bill becomes a law. Now, since we might have to cut Sesame Street out, right, because of budget cuts for public television, is that even still on? I don't even have a clue. Do our kids have a hope of learning how a bill becomes law? Well, I thought I might explain it real quickly to everyone who doesn't understand how this happens. But how does a tax law get passed? Here's what happens. The president, yes, proposes tax legislation. He recommends this is what we want to do. The House Committee on the Ways and Means, they're in charge of the checkbook, mark up the president's proposal to draft legislation. The Constitution states that all legislation concerning taxes must originate in the House of Representatives. The House, the full House, passes the draft legislation, and now it becomes a bill. Now the Sesame Street kicks in, right? The song, a bill, only a bill, on Capitol Hill. That's all I remember, that song. The Senate Finance Committee reviews the bill. That's the first stop for the tax bill passed by the House. It's the Senate Finance Committee. That's the first step. Then they have this thing called the Conference Committee. It takes action. The Conference Committee, they're a joint committee composed of senior House and Senate members that originally considered the legislation. They review the two versions of the bill and return its own version back to both the House and the Senate for vote. The new version is passed. The revised bill is sent to the president. And if it's not passed, the bill is dead. But that's when the executive branch takes action. Once the president receives the bill, he gets additional advice from the Secretary of the Treasury, maybe. In Trump's case, maybe not. I don't know. It's a big, beautiful bill. We're going to pass it no matter what. But the federal agencies make their decision, and the president then signs the bill. The IRS will take action to carry out the provision of the tax bill. And guess what? It's now a law. That's the way a bill becomes. That's the way a bill becomes a bill. It's the way the bill becomes a law. All right? So cut this out, paste it, send it to your kids. Now they understand how this process works. All right, let's take a break, come back. I'm going to talk about the biggest scams going on out there that we did talk about also at the conference. And it's called, I'll say it right this time, because I said it wrong on Glasses Show, Investors and Advisors Avoid This Pig Butchering Scam. When we come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. It's big, it's beautiful. All right, I love that. It's so much fun to make fun of things, but then also pay attention to things. So I was at the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor meeting in Atlanta. Guest speaker on avoiding this pig butchering scam. And I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm like, yep, I've had this happen to clients of mine before. And the hard part is talking sense into them. So I learned about this through a variety of means. But what is the pig butchering scheme? Well, I read through a recent, he talked about this guy losing $600,000 to the scam. And the reality underscores the immediate and devastating impact of this con game. So given the direct exposure and the scale of these losses, I believe this will be the most important and significant financial threat facing older people. And their advisors, like me, have to recognize the urgency, prioritizing education, prevention, right, efforts to protect the vulnerable people in this population. And that's why I wanted to talk about this. So if someone's going through this right now, you can say, please, please listen to this segment on the pig butchering scam. All right, here's how this thing goes. And the reason is most people in this demographic don't have pensions any longer. They have big, fat 401ks and IRAs. So it's very, very susceptible to investment schemes. And that this is where this pig butchering may come from, is that we have this big, low-hanging fruit out there, and these scammers know it. So the crime of the pig butchering gets its name from the analogy. I've used this so many times in my life. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. Reflecting the scammer's patient and calculated approach to build trust with their victims before defrauding them of substantial amounts of money. This is sophisticated, emotional, manipulative investment fraud that has gained significant global traction. The con uniquely blends elements of romance scams, social engineering, and cryptocurrency investment deceit, resulting in devastating financial and emotional losses for the victims. I'm reading segments from his presentation. To learn more about the process, I've been, kind of studying some of these things, but here's a case. So the expert that spoke at the event was involved he was a victim. He pretended to be someone and played along. And they played along. I wouldn't even play along because I have a buddy that does that. He plays along with them, jacks with them. And it's funny because eventually he says outrageous things and it makes me laugh till I cry. My wife said, you don't do that. I won't do it. But he said, I've been involved as a victim of a pig butchering scam, communicating with a perpetrator calling herself Isla, a persona using a Russian female model. He said, likely to be a victim of human trafficking, manipulated by a Thailand-based criminal syndicate. They have frequent daily exchanges, 6 to 8 times a day, involving her initial contact in the morning greetings, detail of her day. She's constantly expressing care and concern for his well-being, inquiring about his health, sending mood photos like hurting just everyday stuff, yoga, chores, groceries, outings with friends, nightly well wishes. This constant, in the way he put it, seemingly innocent attention fosters a sense of warmth and welcome, prioritizing trust, right? Building trust over, and or maybe romance. For a lonely individual receiving this message stream, that engineered connection is designed to create an emotional dependency, a key tactic in the pig butchering scam. Now, the way it works is the initial contact, right? Usually some you know, innocent thing like, oh, sorry, wrong number, or maybe they put a fake photo on a Facebook profile or through a dating app or something like that. And then they fabricate all these personal details in order to appear successful and appealing. And then those initial efforts are designed to kind of elicit a response or even a, you know, even a correction about a wrong number, which, no, it's not the wrong number. What's your name? You know, that go on and talk with me or whatever. That starts a conversation. Every scam that he has seen involved a quickly move from a social media platform to the messaging app WhatsApp. So if you know someone that says, oh, I'm communicating on WhatsApp, I'm going to be suspicious. That basically allows you to send internet messages, images, audio, or video. Now, number two, they start building the trust and rapport. This is very crucial. Scammers dedicate time and effort to cultivate this relationship with the victim. They engage in daily conversations, mirroring the victim's interests, sharing personal stories, obviously fabricated, and offering emotional support. In the romance-focused scams, the con artist may express a romantic interest and show the victim attention and virtual affection. This phase can last for weeks, even months, allowing the would-be thief to gain the victim's trust and create a strong emotional connection. Then they introduce the investment opportunity. Usually it's a crypto thing. Then they guide the investment. They get them to put some money in. They might even show some fraudulent gains. It looks like a legitimate cryptocurrency exchange, but it's not. It's a platform that's fraudulent and controlled by the scammer. They might even allow the person to withdraw some funds on a small gain to get, again, to guide this investment, to get them to put more money in. And that's where the slaughter comes. As a victim invests more money, the scammers manipulate the fake platform to show more and more profits. And when the victim attempts to withdraw funds or any substantial amount that has been stolen, they'll create obstacles. It might be, oh, we have to pay taxes, fees, or other made-up charges that, you know, have to be paid before the funds can be released. And eventually all the communication stops. The victim will realize the bad news, the money is gone, and the online persona they trusted has vanished. So people that are lonely, emotional, vulnerable individuals, those older people that are trying to get rich quick, people that are naturally trusting, those are people that are most vulnerable. You got to get in front of this pig butchering scam that requires vigilance, skepticism, cautious approach to online interactions, as well as doubts about investment opportunities. So be wary of all this. Don't share your information with these people. Never send money to someone you've only met online. There's just so many things. By understanding, though, the tactics used in this pig butchering scam and implementing these some proactive measures, we can help people avoid this, or I can help you avoid getting scammed in big time. That'll reduce the risk of this happening. A healthy dose of skepticism, my wife doesn't need any more of that, and a cautious approach to online interactions, that's the best defense. I've had clients that swear to God, this is real. I've gone to lunch with them. I've sent documentaries to them. I sent articles to them. And could not get them convinced. And it got to the point where we had to fire the client because we were now potentially at risk because we were letting him take money out of his accounts to fund this scam. And we knew it was a scam. And guess what? My client lost over $500,000. In fact, he took a home equity line to continue to fund the scam. So I wanted to shoot that out there because I do think it could be, and it already is, maybe one of the biggest scams going and the biggest threat to retirees in the future. It happened to him. He had lost his wife about a year before, and he was just vulnerable. Smart guy, rich guy, vulnerable, and it can happen to anyone. So don't be embarrassed if it happened to you. It can, if by you talking to someone else about the situation, it will help someone else too. All right, I'm going to take a break. I'll come back and do one more segment and then wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All All right, finally, it's high school graduation week. Congrats to my niece, Macy Hayes, who's graduating from Bloomington South. She's been working at our office for a few years, and she's going to play golf at Franklin. Congratulations. Her open house will be on Friday. My sister-in-law, Jackie, can't even talk about sending her baby away to college without welling up and crying. She's only about an hour away, Jack, but that's not the point. All of us who have dropped our kids off to college know it's horrible. It's like the first week of kindergarten. The two worst days of my life, I always say, which, you know, I'm not sure that's really true. I've had a lot of great days, but dropping your kid off at kindergarten, them not wanting you to walk them to the door, they want their independence. That's the same attitude Will had, and we dropped him off at IUPUI. My tough and rough friend George Shermer, dropping his daughter Kelsey off at Purdue for the first time, goes to Subway to have a sandwich, and Betty says to him, "What's wrong, George?" He's over there crying. It's just part of it, part of the process. Your kids want to be independent, but we have to accept that the parent-child dynamic is changing. But I would say when you move your kid, make it simple. We took the bare minimums with Willie up to IUP. Just take what he needs. That gives you an opportunity to go visit them. Now, if they're across the country or across the world, I can't help you with that one. Don't forget to talk to them about safety. Don't overdo it. Conversation about safety, responsible behavior. Reinforce that as time goes on. This is a great time for them to learn financial responsibility. I'm not saying my son learned it, but it is a good time. Give him a budget. Can't spend it all on Monday. You won't have anything on Friday. And then kind of take the lead from them a little bit. Let them make some decisions, make some mistakes. I don't care how dirty their dorm room is. Try to encourage behavior, but let the child kind of lead it. I'm not a perfect parent. I have one kid, as you all know. Many of you have done it many times before. But be excited for all these young people who are graduating high school. And, remember, $20 is not what $20 used to be. I'm like, what do people give now, right? When I got $20, that was, I'm 55 years old, right? That was 35 years ago or more than that. Probably a hundo, right? For someone that you know, maybe $50. But anyway, but I will say this, the cards are expensive, so that you got to count that in as well. All right, we're going to take a break, come back and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, I hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed any of the show, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. here on the station. 98.7, Bloomington's Voice, always on WGCLradio.com. And right after the Thursday night airing, you can catch it on the podcast, wherever you pick up your favorite podcast. Just type in Your Money with David Hayes, subscribe, and it will give you a little alert each week. You can play it at your leisure. So I hope everyone has a fantastic, fantastic week. Again, congratulations to all the high school people who are graduating. We're going to do our Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame the ceremony for scholarships on Monday at my office. I can't wait for that. Have a great one, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.